Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Multicolored Culture Laser. I'm Ryan Van Winkle, and I am not your host for this episode, but I am going to leave you in the very capable hands of Deborah Pearson.
When Ryan Van Winkle asked me to interview a rapper named Chosen in London, I was both nervous and intrigued. I know little to nothing about hip-hop. In fact, I know so little that I'm not even sure that what Chosen Official does should technically be called hip-hop. But what drew me to meeting Chosen wasn't being educated in a musical genre where I'm pretty much completely lost, but the way that Chosen approaches this musical genre. Chosen is a rapper who turned down a major record label at a young age, and he is now going fiercely independent. If you visited his website, listened to his music, or watched his music videos, you would be forgiven for thinking that he's definitely signed with a major label. But in fact, he's actually doing it all his way, just like Frank Sinatra says. I met Chosen Official at composer Robin Schlachtermeyer's studio on March 28th. He and Robin were in rehearsals for an ambitious, epic multimedia concert, which will be happening at the Tabernacle in Notting Hill on the 17th of April.
Hello, everybody.
It's the Multicolored Cultural Laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pods of wonder and amazement. Multicolored Cultural Laser.
Hello, Culture Laser fans. We are here with Chosen Official and with Robin Schlachtermeyer. And we are talking about a gig that's coming up. But I might just hand it over to you guys to tell us a little bit about that.
We're doing the gig on April the 17th at the Tabernacle in Notting Hill. Everybody knows me about 3 years ago for doing rap with sort of alternative sounds. This is the next level. This is something unique and something that ticks the box for me in my career, definitely, for sure. So
great. Can you tell us a little bit about Robin's involvement? And Robin, can you tell us a bit about your involvement too?
So basically, I was in the studio recording a tune called True to My Love, which is one of the tunes that I'm going to perform on the night. Before that, I had a meeting with my manager that, you know, we wanted to do something different and unique and wanted to bring a statement. So, you know, fair play to my manager, Fran McMillan. She said to me, why don't you put some strings in there, like an orchestra? And I was like, it just literally set bell alarms in my head, because I thought, you know, that could be the next chapter of what I'm trying to portray, and it could be a challenge for me as well. And that's what Chosen Official is always about. It's about challenges, whether it's visuals, songs, putting people together. It's always about a challenge. But, you know, I think if you bring the right team of people together, you can always make magic.
That's great. So basically, Robin is taking one of your tracks or several of your tracks and making orchestral arrangements that are going to happen during the live gig.
Yeah.
So it's nine tracks. It's a set of nine tracks, total of about 45 minutes from Chosen's back catalogue. So the things he's performed before in different ways. They're sort of arranged for a full string section.
And will there be a live orchestra?
It'll be all there at the venue. So it'll be a total of, well, I don't know how many
12, 13, I think it was.
13 and then some vocalists as well.
Yeah, vocalists. So yeah.
Guest vocalists as well.
So all in all, about 20 people, on stage on the night.
And me wearing my arms about properly as well.
Amazing. Are you going to be kind of conducting?
Probably, because it's the first time we're doing this live, and we've had some rehearsals, which went really well.
Yeah.
But I think with this kind of thing, once the musicians know how it's going to be, they might be fine on their own in a small show like that. But I think it's good to have a bit of guidance for them.
It's not just going to be just an orchestra. You're going to have visuals in the background, you know. You're going to have a feel, you know. And it's more, for me, poetry. It's more, if I'm going to do it in one way, this is the way to do it. So,
I was told by Robin that you have recently gone independent.
All right. So I think it was like 2003, I can't remember how old it was that time, but I remember I got a deal offered to me by Virgin Records. They wanted me to be in a boy band, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I was in Kensal Green in their offices, and you know, as a young kid, you're going to be like, oh wow, Virgin Records, you know, looking around, see all the plaques and everything, and then you walk in and it's the A&R, and then he tells me, yeah, I want to sign you. Not on the basis of what he scouted me for, on the basis of what they're trying to do. So I was like, okay. And cut long story short, they said, we're not doing no urban music. We're just going to go straight pop. So you're going to be in a band consist of five people, including you, but you're going to be the rapper and there's going to be four singers. And I just turned down the deal straight away. I said, you know, I totally respect the offer and I thank you for the opportunity, but I'm not going to take it because I believe in what I believe in, and I believe that, you know, this ain't what I want to do. And so thank you. And he actually respected me upon it, and you know, he wished me all the best. So I just decided, you know what, being around a circle of people, and at the time as well, being in that camp, because the camp I was, where Jesse J was at the time as well, I was the boy in the corner. Nobody knew I could rap, nobody knew I could write, nobody knew I could even do music. I was literally the boy in the corner. You might as well call me the T-man, because if somebody needed something from the shop, I'll go and get it, or if somebody needed help. But I was just watching everything, quiet. And it's just weird how today all these people that I was watching come back to me and ask me for advice on this, that and the other. So I just decided I'm gonna do it by myself. I'm gonna go independently and I'm just gonna do my lane, and then hopefully one day the right person will understand the vision that I'm trying to portray and will not only try to say, yeah, you know, I can make you a lot of money. He will be like, you know what, I respect what you're doing, I love what you're doing, I want to be with the team, how can I help? And I appreciate that more. So yeah, definitely independent in this day and age, it's much better, I would say, anyway, to be creative.
Listen, television, what's the point of this eye magnet, man-made device? Is it programmed to entertain lives or hypnotize us as parasites? A control line between man and machine, it's strange how things are projected towards our eye string. Generate cells to say I make eye cream. A subliminal mind, this scheme that eventually makes us to become eye fiends, trapping us in the wrong dreams. Say we're the right class but end up with the wrong team, because this is a mind path that keeps sending signals to have the last laugh. So police the revisions, intermission,
maintain the name of this system.
Vision. This is television. We're attracting a system where people that have the mic choice have no opinion. Television. This is television. Television. This is television. We're attracting a system where people that have the mic choice have no opinion. Television. This is television.
We're living in this transmission place where juveniles get familiar with gats beneath the waist. Ain't showing the hearts rights to become an ace, so I take deeper shots and then chase. In this diabolical rat race, it's strange how things change, how citizens selling their souls for a famous face all come from one box in your home base. As we're placed in the matrix, I mainly became the enemy of this state, cause I'm stuck in the layer cake. So I used their forces to make my prison break, but channel YouTube showed me that I couldn't be invisible in this city. What Armageddon saw was about to occur. Boys in the hood showed me about my turf. End of days, back to become first. I robots back to become worse. Sometimes I'm built to a ball, cause what I saw my normal will pull. Blood diamonds, lost King Scotland, tomb raiding, it's upgraded, and central versions of the Da Vinci. That's why these lambs couldn't silence me.
Robin, I was just wondering, what was it about Chosen's music when you listened that made you say, you know, yes, I want to get on board, I want to do this?
Well, for a start, it's really quite obvious quite early on how suitable it is for that kind of arrangement. Sometimes in love music you get things which are very, the beat is everything, and there's not that much harmony or melodic content, and there's always harmony in Chosen's music. And not only that, there's also sort of some melodic elements. Sometimes they're a bit more in the background, but there's always something there that you can draw and that you can tease out. And really, there was no problem at all. You know, there was never any issues where I thought, oh, you know, if there's only a drum playing, what are you going to do with 12 string players or a piano? What are they going to do, you know? But there was never really a moment like that. There are bits of which are more percussive, but there's always something that the music naturally lends itself for. So I think it's, you know, the match, it was not a hard match. It was an obvious match. And I think at the rehearsal, it became really obvious really quickly that that was the case.
It was a risk. I didn't think you could do that with strings. Honestly, certain tracks that I created, I didn't think you could do it with strings, but he did. And it's just a feel, and you know, I'm even getting nervous to the night as well, because it's such an impact as well. So yeah, definitely.
There's no need to be.
And from the rehearsal that you did you feel like the songs took on a sort of fuller quality, or did they take on a more epic quality with the strings?
I just knew how the day was going to go. I kid you not, I knew exactly from when 10 o'clock till 6 o'clock how everything was going to go, and I just knew. But I knew when we got it right, I knew it was going to be as epic as ever. And it was just like, all right, now let's perform this in front of 300-400 people and let's get it over and done with, sort of feeling. So, yeah.
I was wondering how, as an independent musician, do you go about booking a 12-piece orchestra? Did you just look through contacts you had, or...
You know what?
This
is the most funniest story ever. After the idea from my manager to do orchestra, looking around on Facebook, talking to people, but people like, nah, I just do it solely, or, you know, I just do this or that. So it's like, okay, Friday night, 3 o'clock, my next door neighbour says, hey, we're having a party next door. I thought, I might as well. You know what? Why not? Walked in, literally 10 seconds, walked upstairs, walked into the party, and it was like me, my friend Punk, and these group of girls. But it was these two twins, and they're called Steph and Nat. You know, they're very, 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 very happy, bubbly girls. So they're like, right. And then it was like, yeah, talking. So I said, what do you do for a living? And they say, oh, we're string players. And it just hit me. Wow, you're string players. And I thought, I think it was meant to be that we were supposed to meet each other. And it was like, really? So what do you do? And I was like, all right then, bring the iPads, because I'm sick and tired of telling people what I do. I might as well just show it. And then I showed it to them, and they were really, really impressed. And then I said, look, let's just have a meeting. So I just told them, this is what I'm looking for.
So is it an all-female orchestra then?
All-female. I got a bit of inspiration from Robin as well, because he showed me certain references, like, you know, Kanye West has done it before. You know, I've seen other things like Jay-Z and Kanye West, but mainly Kanye West, and he had an all-female orchestra as well. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why he would do that, because listening to orchestra, for me, is beautiful.
Yeah, there's something really visually cohesive too about having like an all-female orchestra. It does create an image, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just, they were rock stars with violins. Oh, it was just nuts. But yeah, definitely an experience as well. So yeah, that's how I met with orchestra. So yeah.
I suppose when you work independently, a lot of these things just happen out of serendipity, right?
You know what? I think if you really, what I believe, learning from someone important in my life, if you really, really want something, you can get it. And you need to just go out there and get it yourself. Like, literally, if I never met those girls, I guarantee you I would have found another way of meeting those girls. And I really, really love making music. And I feel that, you know, you've got to do whatever it takes in order to project whatever you're trying to portray. So it's going to be a journey. It's going to be hard as an independent artist, because, you know, music today is about a business rather than the art. So, you know, if you come to someone with an idea, they're going to just say to you, how can you guarantee me a return? Rather than, you know what, I see the longevity with this, where this is going, this could be, you know, played at the Royal Albert Hall. You know, no one would think that right now. They'll just think about, well, if it ain't going to make me $3,000 in the next 2 weeks, then what's the point? You know, so it's down to you whether you want to take the guts and glory and go for it, or, you know, just give up and do another job.
I think that's really inspiring, especially for people who want to make music, but not just music, but music that has some sort of pop value or hip-hop value, because really that seems like such a commercial industry where artists really are treated like commodities, essentially.
100%. But
I think what's quite interesting is that you could ask, why are they treated like commodities? And partly it's because the traditional business models are crumbling, you know. In the last 10 years, everything has changed so radically that they're fighting to survive. And the way I think they are they're approaching it is by just squeezing the people at the bottom. You know, well, you know, the artists are the people. There's always a ready supply of 17-year-olds who want to be superstars. So that's, the supply is not a problem. And so you just squeeze them and get the most out of them and treat them like, you know, okay, 2 weeks in, it's not working out, bye-bye, you know. That's the way it's sort of going, and I think it's in all areas, actually. It's not just in pop, you know, similar in film music and composing area, which I'm more familiar with now. Same story, you know. And I think the message there is the industry is adapting in some ways by just becoming more aggressive. And people like us, we make the stuff that they rely on, and we have a choice. We can either go, yes, we'll just put up with it, or you choose a different route and you go independent as long as you can. And eventually at some point in your career, when you've got some clout and you've really built your own background, you know, this goes for everyone, really. Then you can maybe say, oh, you know, somebody who can be a partner. And I think it's really important actually to send that message out to people who want to make music, because it is really dispiriting the way the response you get from probably whether it's agencies or management companies or record labels or publishing companies even, sometimes the response is just is really disheartening. And it shows that they're fighting for their survival. Mm-hmm. And the question is, of course, do they all have to survive, you know? Do we really need them all, you know? And I think this probably not. We only need those who really contribute value to the business and to the music at the end of the day.
She told me your worst fears are reasons, are things that makes her feel weak when she's down. But I don't think you know. She tells me her struggles are addictions, a feeling when her world comes crashing down. But I don't think you know. She's losing her mind and there just ain't the time. She's losing her mind. She can't survive without you. I don't think you know.
This cycle's self-elite. She tries to knock me down. The weight of all my commitments forcing me to the ground. Barking a feisty mouth. Calm as a trick, no doubt. She don't want the truth to be heard, so she just slaps it out. Trapped up in the house of pain. Threatened with drugs and chains. No signs of reinforcements. Eager search a perma plague. No matter what it takes, even though my ego breaks. She wants me to surrender, she must be insane. She better contact Frank, Dogs, Lions, and Human Jack Nicholson, matter of fact. If she thinks she's gonna win about the Golden Globe or Oscar for a charismatic act. But temptation's so brutal or evil, I ain't no prude in that. I shed a tear for every time she sees the chemistry we built, overreaching its peak. The tears are broken promises my words fail to keep. She paints a picture of her heart and it bleeds.
I suppose that artists really these days need to be resilient and also resourceful, right? Yeah. I mean, and it sounds like one of the main things that you are is resourceful. I'm incredibly resourceful, actually, to be able to pull off the types of things that you're pulling off independently. Describe to us your vision for this show, because it sounds like you're someone who really works from a vision.
Yeah, just imagine watching a cartoon and you've got a full-on music happening through a cartoon. It's just going to be like that. So you're watching a cartoon, but we're playing the music for you. Exactly what it's going to be. I kid you not, it's going to be exactly like that. You're watching a movie and we're playing the music for you. We're going to do it, but we're going to do it in our way. So, you know, you're going to have an orchestra, you're going to have visuals of people actually having a feel of what we're trying to portray as well. So, yeah.
Great. Do you have video involved in and projections?
Yeah, projections. I wanted to make sure that, you know, it's not too much happening because I want people to focus as well, not just on the projection, but on the music as well. So, you know, that was a bit of a journey. But lucky enough, my really good mate, Halo Jones, he's been there from the beginning. So he's seen where I'm trying to go. So, you know, it was only right to only get him on board to get the visuals right. And, you know, and definitely, yeah, it's going to be emotional for some people as well, because it's dedicated to a friend that we lost a couple of months ago. So, you know, showing that and just show it, it's just more of a story of where I've started to where I am now. So, yeah, definitely visuals. So if you're into that, the Gorillaz, for example, that's what you're going to get. So, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a bit about your musical influences and also your influences for putting together gigs.
It's funny because, yeah, everyone, when you're born, the first person you have to love is Michael Jackson, I have to say. So, you know, it was no question there. I love Michael Jackson. Biggest, for me, definition of music. That's my opinion anyway, definition of music. But after that, I remember my mom, when she first applied for Sky Television, I remember the first music video I ever saw and I thought, I'm not supposed to like it, but it's amazing. And I thought, at such a young age, I thought, this is weird for me. And it was a song called Massive Attack, and the song was called Unfinished Symphony. And it was just the video of a woman walking down the street, but just telling the whole story, and the strings that were playing in that song as well. It was just so powerful, and a statement itself, you know. And I just thought, where there's no chorus in the song, but yet her verses are the chorus, so it was weird. I just thought, wow, that's amazing. And then I think it was the Prodigy, Firestarter. I just thought this was weird, but I loved it. And I thought I couldn't watch in front of my mom because my mom might have thought I was possessed by the devil or something like that, so I couldn't really watch it too much. But yeah, definitely, for sure, if I wanted to concentrate on my lane, so in order to concentrate on my lane, I needed to know who's around me and what they're creating, so I know that I'm not copycatting that. I can take influences, but I can make my own. So yeah,
I wanted to ask, do you find it difficult to work in hip hop when it is actually a very Americanized industry and a very American dominated industry?
Well, you know what?
Industry?
To be fair, like, you know, yeah, like when you rap, it's always going to be classed as hip hop, regardless of what tempo it is. You know, in this country, it's called grime. You know, UK hip hop, UK rap. You know, but yeah, you know, I feel. The reason why I feel that a lot of people appreciate what we do is because you wouldn't expect it from a rapper. You wouldn't expect what we do from a rapper. And that's why people like Kanye West has been embraced by certain musicians and certain people, because he takes a whole complete twist of hip-hop and he projects it in his vision, his way, and the same way I do the same thing. And I think with a lot of rappers, they're scared to come out of their shell and to be more vibrant and more experimental. They rather just be doing the same routine over and over and again, and I think it's kind of killed the culture in a certain way as well, you know, whereas before people always used to come with different sort of videos, different sort of aspects, songs, and you know, the songs were actually thought process as well, you know, they actually took time to write these songs, whereas now you might say 3 lines in a song and it's a number one hit, you know, and it's just like, oh, you know, that's my personal opinion anyway. But yeah, I don't really think it's much bad if someone says, oh, hip hop, regardless of rap, because that's where rap sort of started. But, you know, I just think that, you know, I don't do hip hop. I do alternative. I will say I do alternative. You were not going to expect anything from me, but I know, because what Robin said earlier, the songs that I create have melodies and synths. So people, when they come to my gigs and hear my songs, I'll be honest, majority of the time, they always say, I've heard this song before, but they never heard the song before, because I know how to make a hook and I know how to make it.
I was just wondering if that word was going to come up, because basically the hooks are really, really strong. You know, every single song in the set pretty much has like killer hook, and it's just this waiting to be brought out and kind of drilled into people's minds, really. That's kind of the idea, and this is why bringing it out with live players, you know, that just bringing those hooks to life was just a, you know, great process.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, because I noticed in most of the music videos you're playing with the same singer, I suppose.
Max Stone. Videos you probably saw was like a later stage in my career. The videos before that on my website, it was just more of a development process. So, you know, but with Max, it was weird. I just really, really, really support what he does, and I really love his voice. And I just think, you know, when I worked with him, it brought out the development in me, and it made me feel that this is the next chapter. So, you know, I think when it happened with the first song, Sell My Soul, everybody just thought it was a catchy hook, and it was a statement itself, you know, and people were just a bit baffled how independent artists could do a video just like that, you know. So I felt I needed to do one more song with him, which was Worst Fears, you know, and that was a project in itself, because the guy, Thomas James, he first scouted what I was doing, and he works with a guy called Ben, and they're called directors called Young Pretenders, and they also work with a band called, I think it's called the Fat White Family, I hope I got it right, please, I hope I got it right, but they're doing really well in America right now, touring. And yeah, cut long story short, he just came up with the idea of Max in one room, I'm in the next room, and you know, have this woman in the middle, and we're battling each other in terms of my story of how a woman's treated me, and he's battling each other of this is what she's saying, and she's interpreting the words into her moves. And you know, it was weird because it felt like this is meant to be, because it was shot in the same rooms as Adele's Rolling in the Deep video. So, you know, it's just all kind of like, wow, like sort of amazing feeling to be in the same presence as great artists as well, to do the same sort of art and music, you know. But yeah, definitely Max, you know, I just felt you know, the new songs that are going to come out won't be involved with him, because you know, I feel that once you worked with certain people, you know, you've got to move on and just work with others. But yeah, definitely, yeah, it was a blessing itself to work with him. And
will he be playing at the gig?
Definitely, 100%. He's always got my back. Like, I always got his full support. So yeah, he's definitely playing that gig. You know, we've got one or two surprise people who've been in the industry for time performing as well. So, you know, definitely it's going to be an experience itself. So yeah, definitely.
That's great. Oh, and let's just reinforce, the gig is at the Tabernacle.
Tabernacle, Notting Hill, off Portobello Road, April 17th, 2014 at 8 o'clock.
I'm sorry. future.